I want to focus on the question of Jewish obligations to non-Jewish society. And for the purpose of limiting our discussion a bit, I'll say non-Jewish society as represented by its government, by its civic institutions, and by its laws. So questions like, how do we vote? Do we vote? Is that obvious? Are we politically active? We use that phrase. Are we politically active? Is that a Jewish mandate? Are we morally compelled to be activists? Do we follow the laws? Is that obvious? Do we follow a bad law? Do we protest to change a bad law? In other words, what are our politics, our political lives, and how much are they informed by, mandated by our tradition and our Torah? The other thing that I just want to say I'm not considering in this conversation, in this particular investigation, is our obligations to the government of Israel, the government of a sovereign Jewish state. That is also a huge question, and there's a major conversation in our community, and an especially relevant one in our time, and that's a much bigger question than I would dare to try to tackle in the next hour. So today I'm just asking the question about civic responsibilities as Jews in the diaspora, in the Gola, in Gullis. And the best place, I think, to start that investigation is in Pirkei Avot. And Pirkei Avot, the tractate of the Mishnah, that's early third century, devoted to foundational ethical or dispositional value principles. Now, that's where I want to start. There are earlier places that we could go to start. We could go into the Bible itself and look at books like Esther and Daniel and Jeremiah, voices from the exile. But Pirkei Avot has the advantage of being shorter and clearer in its messaging. So we'll save that other stuff for Purim, for other times. Pirkei Avot has the advantage of being clear in its messaging, except that in this case, it sends us two very different messages, or at least two messages which seem to be in tension. Okay, one of those messages, one of those positions, is expressed by a pair of Mishnayot. I think they work in tandem, but this is one position, pair of Mishnayot in chapters 1 and 2. And the first one at the top of your page, Shemaya Omer, Ehovet Amalacha, Usnat Arabanut, Va'al Titvada L'Rashut. Shemaya used to say, love work, hate authority, which is relevant to our conversation also, hate authority, Va'al Titvada L'Rashut. And don't become too familiar with, and this word will become important for us to take note of, with reshut. Don't get too mixed up with or cozy up to or become too entangled with reshut, which I'm translating here as the ruling powers, whatever they may be, those in charge. Okay, so keep your distance from the powers that be. Okay, that's just a statement, why we don't exactly know, but this other Mishnah, which uses the same word, this Mishnah in chapter 2 of Pirkei Avot, picks up the theme here. But this Mishnah is from Rabbi Gamliel, the son of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. Okay, so just the second Gamliel. Hevu zehirin bereshut, or the third Gamliel. Hevu zehirin bereshut. Be careful in your dealings with the reshut. Okay? Be careful. She'ein makrivin lo la'adam ela letzorech hazman. They do not bring a person close. They do not befriend a person except for their own needs. Nir'in ko'avim b'shat hanatan. They seem like friends when it is in their own interest, when it's to their benefit. V'ein omdin lo la'adam b'shat dachko. But they don't stand by a person in the hour of their distress. Okay, so not just keep a distance, but be careful in general about the ruling powers because they are self-interested. They seem to be out for your good, but they won't take care of you in your time of need. Don't trust the government, right? We might say here. Okay, so that's one ethic that emerges from Pirkei Avot, and it's an ethic of suspicion. Okay, but we have this other Mishnah in the third chapter of Pirkei Avot, this is the one that will really set us off on our journey, that says a very different thing and, take note, uses a different word. Okay. Rabbi Chanina Sgan HaKohanim Omer, Rabbi Chanina, the vice high priest, said, Heve mitpalel b'shlamah shel malchut. pray for the welfare of, and this word is, the malchut. Pray for the welfare of the malchut, shil ilmale mora'a, because if it were not for the fear of it, ish et re'eu chayim balo. If not for the fear of it, every man would swallow his neighbor alive. Okay? So pray for the government. Now, this is not exactly, I said, this is the other side. It's not exactly a full-throated, enthusiastic hooray for the government. There's some cynicism here, too. But this is an affirmation. I mean, this is a desire for there to be a government that controls the society you live in, rather than what we saw before, which seemed to suggest that government is just something to be avoided. This is pray for the government. Now, I keep using the word government, and I'm going to stop using the word government. We're going to just use the word malchut. And the word malchut can be translated in lots of different ways. Maybe the most obvious is to say the kingdom. Like a melech is a king, so the malchut is the kingdom. Right? Older form of government. We still have some of them hanging around, but the kingdom. So the government or the kingdom, I mean, I want to not stick with any one translation. You see, I've given a bunch here. Kingship, the quality of being like a king, or even queenship, which I say not just because we're an egalitarian institution, but because the word itself is feminine in Hebrew grammar, and that matters as well, especially when we see some of the later usages that we'll eventually get to. So monarchy, royalty, royal powers, you see lots of, from now on I'm just going to say malchut, okay, but all of those things, and it is a different word. So we'll be paying attention to that word and not the word reshut, which refers to dominion and just power, just sort of the powers that be, as opposed to malchut, which indicates a certain kind of power, a power associated with royalty. And to whatever extent we think of royalty as something elevated or official, an officially recognized power, it's a different quality of dominion than just sheer power, the powers that be. Okay, so here we have a mandate or an encouragement that becomes a mandate to pray for the malchut. And I say it becomes realized because this is really the source for what eventually becomes the tefillah lishlom hamalchut. The prayer that we say, we continue to say in many shuls, the prayer for the peace or the welfare, this exact thing of the malchut. That's when we say our prayer for the government. There's great, Rabbi Jonathan Sarna has just like great, and Rabbi Eli Confer probably has like great hours on this particular prayer. But this is, whatever else it is, this is a different ethic. Okay, this is like our actual religious selves should be, oh, some kind of, or should give be given over to some kind of support, encouragement, a prayer for the well-being of the government. Okay, so this is the word that we're going to follow here. We're talking in political and sort of legal theory, but this is also, I did some of my schooling in legal theory, and there's a stream of thought in legal academies known as law and literature. Like the literary quality of the law. And that's the sort of method I want to follow here in tracking the use of this word malchut. How is it used in our tradition? What is the connotation? And interesting already that it is used pointedly here as a different word than the more suspicious mishnayot that we saw that used the word reshut. So we're going to continue to follow this word malchut. And we're going to follow it down a certain path. There are also suspicious and unenthusiastic uses of the word malchut that we could follow, like the arba malchuyot that we derive from the prophecy of Daniel, the four kingdoms, the four exiles, the four bad kingdoms that we had to suffer through. That's one way of talking about malchut. And just in general, we talk about shibud malchuyot, the oppression of those kingdoms, of kingdoms in general. There are bad kingdoms out there, and we have suffered under those kingdoms. So that's certainly a live valence in the question of malchut. But I want to follow the more positive impulse here, the idea that there's something about malchut that is, if not good, at least worthy of our prayers, worthy of our support. Okay, so to do that, here we are in the Mishnah, which the earliest layer of the Talmud. We're going to jump now into the Talmud itself to begin to think about how this word, malchut, this concept of the kingship, kingdom, queenship, sovereignty, royalty, all those things, how that word becomes a point of reference in our tradition. And the phrase that I want to move to next, the one that seems to me like the inevitable next concept to consider here, is a phrase that appears several times in the Talmud, and that is a phrase from the Amora Shmuel, the second century Amora Shmuel, and that is Dina de Malchuta Dina. So Dina de Malchuta Dina is the law of the Malchut is the law. Okay? More colloquially, I would say the law of the land is the law. Okay? Whatever the law is, that is, the implication is, also binding upon us as Jews. Okay, and here's just one formulation, but I think it's a particularly good one because it gives you a sense of the stakes here. And what does it mean to say that you would or wouldn't follow the law? Okay, so here in Nedarim is a Nedarim, the tractate that discusses vows. Here is a Mishnah that suggests that one can make a false vow. One can vow lying to someone who is dangerous in some way. So let's take a look here. Nodrin leharagin ulecharamim ulemochsin. So one makes a vow in the context, one makes a false vow. One can make a false vow to killers, murderers, robbers, or tax collectors. Oh, you laughed correctly. Because that's the Mishnah. The Talmud is also surprised by that. Wait, tax collector? Surely we have a principle of pikuach nefesh. I can make a false vow if someone's going to kill me, right? But tax collectors? I can get out of it? So the Gemara responds and uses this principle. V'ha'amar Shmuel. Wait a minute. We know that Shmuel said, dina de malchuta dina. The law of the malchut is the law. And if the law of the malchut is taxes, then that's the law. How could you suggest that I could lie my way out of taxes? It's the law. We have that principle. Okay. So there you have it. There you have an affirmation that if something is the law of the land, I would be obligated to follow it. Is that obvious? It's not necessarily obvious. Not obvious that this legal tradition would have some relationship or some recognition of the legal world that it is sitting in. So this is a question in the Talmud. It's phrased as a question. What do you mean? The law of the land is the law. And there is a response. Amar Rav Chinana, Amar Rav Kahana, Amar Shmuel. And it goes back to quoting Shmuel again. B'moches she'ein lo kitzva. This refers to a tax collector who just collects as much as he possibly can, has no fixed amount. And another opinion, Devei Rabbi Yanai Amar, the school of Rabbi Yanai said, B'moches ha'omed ma'alav, or a tax collector that's just self-appointed, going around collecting taxes. And it was, at times in this period of history, sometimes a less formal position, someone just going around and being the tax collector. In other words, if it's not legitimate, if there's something about this that is corrupt, then that kind of tax collector, you can evade. But in general, once again, a tax collector is operating under the authority of the Malchut. Not just the powers that be, but the kingdom that be, the royal authorities that be. And so you have to follow those laws. Okay. Now, why is that? Why is it so? I keep asking, is it obvious? Maybe it's obvious. So why is it the case that I would be obligated, that this tradition would want me to follow the laws of the land? What is the justification for that? But let me just give you a couple of just attempts to reason through. What is the logic here? What is the idea that we who have a tradition of obligation have obligations also to some external legal context? Okay, the first one is the commentary of the Rashbam on the Talmud. And the Rashbam, this is Rashi's grandson, as you can see there, this is 12th century France. The Rashbam, a medieval authority, says, he responded to this idea, what do you mean? The law of the land is the law. He explains, Kol nasim ve'arnoniot ve'minhagot shel mishpatei malachim shiragilim lahanhig b'malchutam dinahu. All taxes, tariffs, and customs of the lawmakers of kings who regularly lead their malchut, all of those things is the law. And here's his explanation. Shekol bnei hamalchut mikablim aleihem mirtzonam chukei hamelech. Because all of the citizens, all of those who are citizens of this bnei hamalchut, citizens of this kingdom, I'm violating my rule in translating it, have accepted, we presume them to have accepted the king's statutes and laws of their own free will, mirtzonam. They willingly accede to these laws, and therefore it counts as a law, and if you keep the taxes to yourself, you are stealing, okay? So I think, I would summarize this as, the Rashbam thinks we give, by existing in a country, we give tacit consent to some kind of social contract. It is just understood. We're all here. It's understood. Here we are willingly staying here, and so we are subject to the laws. This is our way of affirming that we agree to this system. Okay, I want to give just one other justification or explanation, and this one actually is earlier, so I'm like a little out of order here, but I wanted to present it after, because I think the Rashbam is a little more intuitive, a little more like, this is the social contract language that we in our society are familiar with. Here's a different justification that's not necessarily in contradiction, but is a different logic. And this is from the Talmud itself, another place in the Talmud. Gufa Amar Shmuel, as for what Shmuel said, Dina Malchuta Dina, Amar Rava, Rava says, Teda, you know that this is true, Dikatli Dikle, V'Gashri Gishrei. Because the government, the powers that be, the malchut, what they do is they'll cut down palm trees, and in the context, palm trees that belong to other people. They decide to just take a patch of palm trees, cut them down, and build bridges with them. This principle of just sort of seizing property, we have a term for that, right? What is that term? Eminent domain. All right? And they do this. The Malchut does this, takes things, builds bridges out of them, and then, Vavrinan Aleihu, and we cross those bridges. In other words, we use this, they're out there executing their power, and we don't just exist in that society, we use the stuff that they do. So if we use the stuff that they do, but we don't recognize their legitimate authority to do things like seize property, well, then we're stealing. We're not supposed to be able to use this bridge. This is a stolen bridge, but we walk across the bridge, and that shows that we are accepting the authority in some way of the Malchut. I want to just give a caveat, an important caveat to all of this. Because, first of all, this can't mean, and I mean this just sort of like, it seems like a presumption that we must make. This can't mean that we would follow the laws that contradict the laws of the Torah, right? That, I poured through some of this literature in preparing for this, and that is mentioned occasionally in passing, but it's mostly taken for granted. Well, of course we don't follow the laws if the law is you're not allowed to circumcise your children anymore, right? Like, if it's that kind of law, you have to eat pork. Of course not that. But more than that, the Rambam, Maimonides here, gives us a classic formulation for evaluating how you have an unjust law that you're not required to follow, right? Like a law that does not command our allegiance because there's something broken about the law itself. So here's his formulation. Klalo shel davar. He's discussing theft and thinking about the theft that a ruling power can carry out in seizing from citizens. Klalo shel davar. Kol din sheyechokek oto ha-melech. Any law that a king decrees, lakol, to everybody, velo yeh la'adam echad bifnei atzmo, but not a law targeted to a specific person, that's not theft. As long as the law applies equally to everyone, as long as everyone in this society is taxed, okay, well then that's a fair law. V'kol sheyikach me'ish ze bilvad, but whenever the king takes from one person alone, shelo kadat, in a way that is not conforming to a known law, shelo kadat hayidua lakol, so that does not conform to a law that everybody knows about, ela chamas ze, he just takes it. Hare ze gezel. That's not a law. That's not a law that we have to follow. That's just theft. a targeted law that looks to one particular person, one particular family, one particular community. Maybe the law outlawing circumcision actually would fall under that definition, like that's targeted to affect a certain, that's not a universal law, that's not a fair law, and we don't have to follow that law because it's not a law at all, it's theft. All right, so far we have been looking at or pursuing ethics around the larger society, mostly from a posture of suspicion. That is, even though we called the first two statements of Pirkei Avot the more suspicious, the don't be familiar with the ruling powers at all, even the encouragement to pray for the government, or even the mandate to follow the laws of the Malchut, even those are sort of against the backdrop of some worry that things could go terribly wrong, and it's a pragmatic decision rather than some high ideal. And I want to move now from that suspicion or cynicism to a voice of enthusiasm. And again, we're following this word, you know, this is our method for this investigation. We're following this word malchut to see how it's used and reused and refashioned in the tradition. And here, I want to move to another formulation that picks up on this malchut term. And it's a formulation that appears in halachic literature in lots of places, but my favorite formulation of it is by, somebody mentioned earlier, Rav Moshe Feinstein, the great 20th century legal authority who was on the Lower East Side. I just say this because I was having a coffee with a friend the other day on the Lower East Side, and I like looked across the street, and it was, you know, Metifta Tiferet Yerushalayim, and I was like, wow, like there it is. Like, I don't know if I had never walked by, and it looked kind of like a gym, you know. I was like, that's where Moshe Feinstein used to sit, and I can't believe, like, I'm across the street from where Moshe Feinstein was. He had that kind of status of just, oh, Rav Moshe. Like, he was the figure for a long time in America, the sort of one of the great legal authorities. And he has a term that he returns to sometimes, which employs the word malchut, and we're going to see it appear in one of his tshuvot here, in one of his responsa. And you can see, just flip the page, you can see what he's talking about already just by the koteret, the headline here. This is Rav Moshe Feinstein talking about, we're jumping way into the, you know, like moving from the Talmud, flinging ourselves into the 20th century to hear him talk about Isur lemosadot Torah likach mehamimshala yoter mikafi atanaim shekiva. The prohibition of Torah institutions taking from the government more than their allotted subsidy. Okay? And he's already telling you here that there is a prohibition. Okay? But I want you to listen to the way that he uses the term malchut here. Hine, bedavar inyanei achesed, regarding the matters of kindness, chesed, asher hamemshala shelanu artzot habrit sheba America, that our government, the United States of America, and it's like always fun to see him spell out America, but he's also introduced a word that will be very important here, the chesed, the kindness, regarding the kindness that this country, the United States, has done. Shehashem yitbarach barachamav, because the mercy of God's, in through God's mercy, barachamav hamerubim, al sherit ha-pleita miyudei kol medinot, Europe, you see that there, Europe, saved the remnant of the Jews from all the countries of Europe, and the remnant of the great Torah sages and their students, and brought us here where they have established Torah institutions, both older ones from Europe and new ones. And here's the phrase, and it's bolded in the middle. Val yadei shemalchut shel chesed zo, because this is a malchut of kindness. Okay, that's the phrase, malchut shel chesed. And that phrase has implications. If we can identify that the malchut, whatever it is a malchut, that sounds good, a malchut of kindness. Malchut shel chesed, okay, because of that. And now he gives us a definition. What is a malchut shel chesed? What is a kingdom of kindness? Zo she kol matarata hi lehetiv kol toshvei hamedina, whose entire purpose is to do good for all those who dwell in the land. Okay? That's quite a definition. Okay? Like, I want us to think for a minute. Do we know a country like that? Is this a country like that? What would it take to to be able to identify that a country's entire purpose was to benefit the inhabitants of the land. Not just like keep things safe, not just like make sure that people weren't eating each other alive, but to benefit, to do good for all the inhabitants of the lands. That is a malchut shel chesed. And he continues, this malchut shel chesed himsi'a kama inyanim shel programen. There's another great word. They came up with a number of financial programs to help students in all the schools of the country so that they can study and grow in their education, so that also Torah institutions receive great help for their students. Certainly all of the Rashi Yeshiva, all of the heads of the yeshivot, the principals of the schools, and the students certainly, he assumes, feel vadai. They feel great gratitude to the state. Vadai. Kol Rashi Yeshivot HaManalim VaTalmidim Makirim Kol Tovot HaMedina. They realize all the goodness of the state, and they bless with all the blessings for the sake of peace and all of those who stand in its leadership. This is okay. This is a prayer. This is a blessing. We're going to pray for the welfare, but we're going to express our gratitude to this Malchut Shel Chesed. Okay? Okay, there's an ellipsis here, and he actually gives the legal answer, which is, I mean, basically he just says he takes it for granted. Like, yeah, this is total theft. You're not allowed to take more money than you're allotted, that you're just stealing. That he said, and then I can't help myself. I love his rhetoric here. That's one of the things that he was particularly known for. And just, this is just the rhetoric here of, anyway, we all know that this is theft, though he's obviously responding to cases where this happens. And he says, "Va'av shechashvalom, chas v'shalom, lo nechshadu roshei yeshivot v'haminalim, shehem yirei shemayim." God forbid these roshei yeshivot and directors, they're not suspected, God forbid, of violating the prohibitions of theft, lying, deception, and din d'malchuta. And he incorporates that principle as well. God forbid, I don't suspect these roshei yeshivot of violating all of these obvious and terrible prohibitions. No, because they are aware that this severe sin brings heavenly punishments in this world and in the next, and contravenes the very purpose of the establishment of yeshivot, for the students to develop into authentic, God-fearing people who are extremely careful with any prohibitions regarding financial matters. So I obviously don't even have to remind you, I don't even have to tell you this, Mikol makom matzanu lenachon le'orer bazeh. Nevertheless, we thought it would be appropriate to just sort of bring this up, make it clear, clarify. Okay. We're now beginning to define a spectrum, and on one end of that spectrum is, that's a malchut shel chesed. And a malchut shel chesed would not only command our fidelity, but also our gratitude. And then way on the other end is a malchut zadon, some terrible malchut that obviously, we don't follow the law. Din malchuta doesn't even apply. And then somewhere in the middle still is this realm of din malchuta dina that is more neutral or maybe a little suspicious, but still recognizing the legitimacy and or necessity of the malchut. Okay, one more Rav Moshe thought before we go to our last text here. Rich mentioned voting, and this is also an important document, though it's not an official tshuva. In fact, you can find this document on the internet, a photograph of this letter. I looked it up, and it's cool. Again, just I'm a Rav Moshe fan, so it's just cool to see, like, it's typed out, like, probably by someone else, and then it has his sort of scribbled handwriting. I mean, he wrote very beautifully in Hebrew, but in English. And once again, this seems to be a kind of general response to a communal concern, okay? It's something that is happening out there, which in this case is an indifference to or even a sort of resistance to voting. That was one of the questions we served. So far, we've been talking about, do I have to follow the laws? Do I even steal from the guy? Am I allowed to, do I have to be a law-abiding citizen? But here, as Rich said, to take an active role in my government by voting. And here's a similar spirit, but important to hear of Moshe reflecting on this more active participation in the Malchut. On reaching the shores of the United States, this is 1984. Jews found a safe haven. The rights guaranteed by the United States Constitution and the Bill of Rights have allowed us the freedom to practice our religion without interference and to live in this republic in safety. A fundamental principle of Judaism, is it dina malchuta dina? A fundamental principle of Judaism is hakaras hatov, hakaras hatov. And I think that's the way it's written, hakaras hatov. Recognizing benefits afforded us and giving expression to our appreciation. Therefore, it is incumbent on each Jewish citizen to participate in the democratic system which guards the freedoms we enjoy. The most fundamental responsibility incumbent on each individual is to register and to vote. Sounds like a, like, you know, like a campaign headquarters is calling you or something here. Therefore, I urge all members of the Jewish community to fulfill their obligations by registering as soon as possible and by voting. By this, and listen to this last line, by this we can express our appreciation, which seems to be the main topic here. Gratitude, appreciation, hakaras hatov, and contribute to the continued security of our community. And this is where we get to your point. It's like, then there's another thing, which is us being safe here. And I actually think that he's suggesting that these things are related, right? That our security, we actually shape our security by voting, but also our participation in the larger system and our voting and our showing that we are thankful for this society, that in all kinds of ways, that is one of the ways that we stay safe in this society. So there's a overall, from Moshe, there's a general sense of gratitude and acknowledgement of this Malchut Shel Chesed. But still, like, I think there are notes of, you know, hey, let's not be stupid. Like, let's play it safe here. This is important for us as well. Pragmatic or just sort of like showing, giving that impression to those around us. Okay, so we have considered some formulations of the term Malchut, and we've considered, you know, the way that different formulations of that term create different ethics, sort of meta-halachic principles that govern our lives in the way that halacha does, but by extension then into our relationship to the larger malchut around us, the larger society around us. Many questions remain, of course, of how to apply these concepts. We did some of that work together today. What constitutes a malchut shel chesed? What would be a violation of a just and fair law? So I want to end on a bit of a twist, which is I want to end with a mystical text. We've been so far in the kind of legal realm, but I want to end with a mystical text from Rabbi Nachman. And the reason that I want to end on Rabbi Nachman is that it'll sort of shake up our thinking a little bit, but also because Rabbi Nachman, being a Hasidic teacher, is very interested in the sort of internal experience. How do I sort of existentially relate to or think about my place in the world? And Rabbi Nachman is also going to use the term malchut, but he's going to use it very differently than we've seen it so far, though I hope it will be very relevant to our conversation. It'll be a little bit, I'm going to ask you for 10 minutes to take a little bit of like a poetic kind of journey and sort of like into his, you know, less formal, rigid, logical, legal articulation here, but more considering the term. And in order to do that, I have to give you just like 2 minutes of like Kabbalah 101, which is just, and some of you will know this, but he is operating within a framework where there are the Eser Sfirot, the 10 divine emanations. This is in classical Kabbalah. There are 10 forces through which God creates the world and through which God manifests in the world. Because God's self is just the Ein Sof, infinite, impossible to relate to or know. And so the Kabbalists, grappling with the question, well, how do we experience God if God is so unknowable? The Kabbalists use these 10 forces, these 10 attributes or qualities of God to express ways in which we experience God in the world. And we don't have to go through them all, but what's important for our conversation is the last, the 10th of these forces is Malchut. Okay, which is to say, and this makes sense because there's some sort of hierarchy. We can't know God. God is somewhere out there. God is the great beyond. But we experience, you know, through layers and layers and layers, we experience the sort of the bottom rung of God's manifestation in the world, which is God's malchut, God's dominion, God's like litaken olam b'malchut shaddai, to we say in Aleinu, to make the world a place where God's dominion is palpable, is present. And that's how the term malchut gets used there. But what is the twist in Hasidic writing is that these forces which apply to God also apply to everything in the world because God created the world with these forces and certainly and above all apply to us. But let me just read just two lines here that are kind of the key points. Ki yesh b'chol echad m'Yisrael b'chinat malchut. Every one of the people of Israel possess some aspect of malchut v'chol echad lefi b'chinato. And everyone according to their character. Yeshu Shareb Beito, there are those who rule over their household, the Yeshu Shemoshel Bioter, and those who rule over a wider sphere, the Chen Yeshu Moshel Al Kol Alam. And then there are those who rule over the whole world. Okay? And then the one other thing that he adds is, and there's a malchut that is itgalia, that is revealed, and then there is a malchut also that is hidden. So the very thing that he just said, there are those who rule over just their household, some rule over wider sphere, but it's not always clear who rules over what. Sometimes this, it's hidden, people's influence or their malchut. In closing, this Rabbi Nachman, for me, is a way to begin to think about how I weigh my priorities. Like, where do I spend my social capital, my political capital, my financial capital, my emotional investment? Like, where do I invest? And I have to do, I think Rabbi Nachman is suggesting that we all have to do some cheshbon ha-nefesh. Like, we really have to look inside ourselves and ask, where do I have influence? Like, where can I change things? Where can I help? You know, like Spider-Man says, with great power comes great responsibility, right? Like, if I have the capacity to change things, to influence whether the whole country I'm in or just the Jewish community or just my household, consider where is my influence? And then if I have influence, well, then take that seriously. Use your malchut in the world, and may it be a malchut of chesed. But also, you know, think about where I don't have influence. What can I not change in this world? What is not within my sphere of influence? And that you can let go of. Like, that can help you assess your priorities. There are things that I might be frustrated by and outraged by, but there are certain things I can change and certain things that I can't, and I have to focus on the things that I can change. So I just want to end by blessing us all with, as Rob was saying, with going out into the world with our own malchut and making sure that our malchut, our individual malchut, is a malchut of chesed. That we are manifesting God's attributes in the world and that we're bringing chesed to everything we do, whether it's just in our interpersonal relationships, our friends, our household, or whether we have, you know, a wider sphere of influence. Right now I've got this room, you know, like whatever are the rooms in our lives, the domains in our lives, and some of us, and we don't even, it's not even always obvious, some of us have great, tremendous influence. So if you've got that, make sure you use it for the good. So thanks, everybody.